Welcome to Her Story Podcast.
Son histoire à elle, un balado bilingue qui met en valeur non seulement le succès des femmes du Québec, mais qui souligne leur pratique et vie de tous les jours. I'll be talking with creative, successful and game-changing women who are inspiring and relatable in the ordinary and extraordinary lives they lead. Hi there! I'm Kathleen Stavert, your host of the Her Story Podcast. Merci d'être de retour. C'est le troisième épisode sur la série de la mort. And I have to ask you if you know about the business of death here in Quebec. Connaissez-vous la procédure qui vous devez contacter après la mort de quelqu'un? Connaissez-vous vos droits en tant que parenté de la personne qui est morte? I had no idea about the legislation of death until Marie-Pierre Beauséjour sat down with me to explain the current law around death and funerals, like what happens to the body right after death, and the choices that are available to us here in Quebec. Marie-Pierre is a second-year PhD student in humanities, and her fields are anthropology, sociology, and public health. Et comme elle l'explique si bien dans ses mots, je me questionne sur ce que veut dire la mise à distance du corps dans un contexte de sécularisation, médicalisation, professionnalisation et bureaucratisation, de construire une relation avec le cadavre dans la mesure où les soins ont été déplacés des familles aux industries funéraires et médecins. We tend to shy away from the subject of death, let alone the logistics of it. So it was surprisingly refreshing to speak with Marie-Pierre, who is so curious, inquisitive, and who doesn't burrow away from the mess of death. In fact, thanks to Marie-Pierre, I've been reflecting on how we can make death and after death more just, inclusive, diverse. And I think Marie-Pierre is one of the thought leaders of this, so hopefully we'll have her back on the podcast post-PhD for more. But for now, this is an extremely educational and interesting interview, and I hope it gets you thinking and challenging the status quo. Allô, Marie-Pierre.
Allô.
Bienvenue au podcast Son histoire à elle. Welcome to Her Story. On se connaît pas. C'est la première fois qu'on se rencontre. Puis tu m'as envoyé ton texte, ton paper pour un séminaire que tu as donné. Est-ce que tu peux nous expliquer c'est quoi le contexte?
OK, par où je commence?
Oui, c'est ça.
OK. Well, I'm a student in humanities, PhD in humanities at Concordia. So I'm studying sociology, anthropology, and public health. And I'm also in the field of death studies. So I'm really interested in everything that has to do with death. And my paper was about funeral regulations in Quebec and across Canada and the United States. So in my paper, I was comparing the funeral legislation here in Quebec with the other provinces to see how funeral practices in Quebec are a little bit more shaped or constrained by the regulation. And I'm interested in seeing why is it like that and what it does to people and families in the real life. So, yeah.
Okay, so many questions.
Yeah.
So, what currently is the law in Quebec regarding funeral practices and business?
Okay, so the law regulates many aspects of funeral practices. So the first aspect is it regulates all the funeral services businesses, so all the funeral homes and transportation, cemeteries, burials, cremation, everything is under the new law that is called the Funeral Operation Act, I think. En français, c'est la loi sur les activités funéraires. So it's a 2016 law. It was voted, adopted in February 2016, so it's been 4 years now.
Puis je veux juste aussi spécifier que la loi n'a pas été changée depuis les années 70?
C'est ça. Okay. C'était non touché depuis les années 70. C'est que dans le fond, quand il y a petit à petit, il y a eu plusieurs développements dans le monde funéraire, si on veut, l'apparition de nouvelles techniques d'embaumement, de crémation, des nouvelles dispositions de funéraires, des nouvelles manières de concevoir les arrangements funéraires, donc de se préparer en avance. Il y a eu aussi un détachement qui s'est fait progressivement avec l'Église, plus de personnes qui voulaient des choses à part de la religion, si on veut. Donc, il y a eu plusieurs changements sur plusieurs décennies, puis on a vu aussi que la crémation, surtout au début des années 2000, a connu vraiment une grande popularité. Donc, on parle des taux de crémation au Québec de moins de 2% en 60, 62, 63. Puis quand en 63, le Vatican a dit qu'il était d'accord avec la crémation, finalement, ça s'est pas fait tout de suite. Tranquillement, un petit peu plus de personnes au Québec ont commencé à opter pour la crémation, puis on a vu vraiment un bond significatif dans les années 90, puis en 2000, début des années 2000, il y a eu vraiment on peut appeler ça un renversement, où là, c'est vraiment la crémation prime sur tous les autres modes de disposition du corps, donc enterrement.
Before we go a little further, can you just really quickly just define the languaging?
You mean cremation?
Yeah, cremation, burial.
Okay, so cremation is when the body is burned and at the end of the process, the bones are crushed and then you get the ashes that are actually bone powder in an urn. And then you can do whatever you want. Not whatever you want, but you can bury the urn, or scatter the ashes, or separate the ashes.
Okay.
In some cases. And for the burial, well, what we call dans le jargon, the traditional burial is the body is embalmed and then there's a viewing and then it's interred in a cemetery. So this is the classic traditional burial that was the main practice for the last, like from the beginning of the funeral industry, maybe like the main era of the funeral industry in the 50s jusqu'aux années 2000, jusqu'à temps que la crémation.
Puis l'embaumement?
Embalming is when you empty the body from all the natural fluids of the body and then you inject a solution of formaldehyde into the body to preserve the organs and the body and to stop the decomposition process. So okay. This is the embalming in the funeral industry sense.
And is that also like sort of putting on makeup and dressing the body?
Yes, all of absolutely. All of that, but you can have, I mean, before the 50s when like there were more artisanal practices around like embalming, it was like more
an art form.
Yes, like you would learn it from your dad, or not from your mom obviously, but this is another topic, but from your dad, and then you would just like learn why you do it, you know,
right.
And you develop some tricks, but it's an art form. And so it was more basic. There were no pumping the fluids. It was just like reconstructing maybe facial characteristics, putting makeup, sewing things, stuff like
sewing
that.
Sewing an ear back on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Drawing in some eyebrows.
Yeah, well, even today, the mouth, in order to keep it shut, it's...
Right. Interesting.
Yeah. So it was more basic back then, but then... there was what we call professionalization, where they would start teaching classes about embalming in the universities.
Okay.
So, and now today, in the 80s, it was the program shift from the university to Collège de Rosemont, which is Cégep de Rosemont. And now it's only, in Quebec, it's the only institution that teaches you how to become an embalmer.
Wow.
There's also some programs in Sainte-Foy, but it's everything that has to do with the funeral director job, except the embalming process. So for the embalming, it's only at Cégep de Rosemont in Quebec.
So there's probably very few people who do embalmment in Quebec.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
It's not a common thing.
There are more doctors than embalmers.
Obviously, yeah. Fait que c'est ça. Fait que merci pour ça de juste expliquer puis définir les termes, parce que je sais pas si c'est tout le monde qui est au courant de ça. Fait que là, juste pour retourner à la législation.
OK. Donc, en fait, les caractéristiques, je vais y aller comme ça. Ce qui distingue le Québec des autres provinces, c'est l'obligation de passer par le directeur de funérailles pour remplir la déclaration de décès et pour transporter le corps, which is not the case in the other provinces.
Quand tu dis transporter le corps, ça veut dire de...
From the
hospital,
or hospice, or palliative care house, or whatever, where the body was when the death occurred, to the funeral home, or to the crematorium, or, well, that's it, mainly, because you cannot put the body anywhere else. So, yeah, you need to hire a funeral services to do so. You cannot, I mean,
do anything else.
So that means that that doesn't mean that people in the rest of Canada are just like transporting their loved ones, in their car. That means that here you have to open up like a dossier with a funeral services company, and then you have fees for that. You have to deal with the funeral director. You need to make arrangements. You need to, so. You cannot deal with that alone.
Okay.
That's like alone and with.
So a funeral house and a funeral director doesn't only deal with the ceremony of a funeral.
No.
That's so surprising. Yeah. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, but it can be a relief for families, because you just sometimes don't want to deal with that. You just want someone to take everything in charge. And I think it's a good thing that can be done that way. But the thing is, other people might want to have a larger role in the funeral and taking care of the body and stuff, and this is not really easy here in Quebec with how the law is written. So because you cannot, for example, because of another aspect of the law where you have to embalm the body within a certain time frame, which is 24 hours here in Quebec from the death.
Time of death.
Yeah. And if you want to have a viewing. And or if the viewing starts 18 hours after the death. So
okay.
So that means that you could have a funeral at home. For example, if the person dies at home, then you can have people come and say their last goodbyes and stuff. But then you really need to, the body must be moved within an 18-hour time frame. So you really need to call the funeral director and say, like, yeah, I need...
You need to come pick up the body.
And sometimes you don't have the choice. For example, in the hospital, you have maybe like an hour to stay with the body, but they need to empty the room, or they... In some cases, I don't mean in every cases, but sometimes it's just you don't, if you live, like for example in Quebec, but the person is in Montreal, then you don't even have the time to come and see the body, for example. But you don't have necessarily to see the body, but some people might want to do so. And it's harder in Quebec than in other places in Canada to do so.
Ouais, c'est ça. En lisant ton texte, t'expliquais les autres options puis les autres lois dans d'autres provinces, notamment en Ontario puis en Colombie-Britannique. Est-ce que tu peux parler un petit peu de...
Oui.
De qu'est-ce qu'il y a?
OK. Les différences. En Colombie-Britannique puis en Ontario, par exemple, il y a une plus grande liberté aux familles. C'est comme si... les proches de la personne décédée vont avoir les mêmes droits qu'un service de funérailles au moment du décès de la personne. On pourrait dire ça comme ça. Donc, c'est pas tout le monde qui va pouvoir transporter le corps, mais certains membres de la famille. Il va avoir aussi plus... There are no regulations with regard to the time frame for embalming, for example. You don't have to embalm in within a 24-hour period, so you can have the body at home and then bury it. And then, so.
Puis à quel point que le corps commence à se décomposer? It's que ça dépend des personnes.
Yes, it depends. I'm not an expert in that field, but it depends on the person, on the type of death. For example, some cancer patients, the decomposition process is already started before has already started before death. So, but it can be quick, but it cannot be. You can also slow it down by some artisanal techniques like ice, like ice pack.
Oh, wow.
From your freezer. Yeah.
Okay. From the freezer.
And there are some also other things like dry ice and some special ice, but you can totally slow down the decomposition process with just ice, which is what like our great grandmothers used to do with the dead bodies back then. So what we call now, for example, a green burial, where there are no embalming, where the body is just buried in a shroud or like in a really simple bio wood coffin. It was just a funeral period back then. So it's like a return to, I don't know, the basics.
Yeah, return to the earth in a way.
Yeah, in a way.
Yeah.
And so for the green burial, because I just mentioned it, in Ontario, British Columbia, and other provinces, there are some specific cemeteries where you cannot only be buried there if you are not embalmed, if you are in a biodegradable shroud or coffin. So a shroud is just the piece of fabric that you wrap the body in. So, and the goal, the ultimate goal of the green burial advocates, if you like, is to be able to reuse the same burial plot for like after 25 years when there are only bones, then you can put someone else in, like
on top of the bone
like they used to do, because it's like a return, like you said, to the earth. So
wow.
But you cannot do that in Quebec right now.
Okay.
Because of the law. So there are only green burial places in Ontario and British Columbia in Canada that are certified, if you like, because there's a Green Burial Council of Canada. So there are like some criteria that you need to, you know, to check on your list to get the certification and be a green burial cemetery. There are some green, I think there's one in Les Laurentides, a green cemetery, but only for ashes and urns. So no bodies are.
So what would make that green? Someone who's cremated, you wouldn't necessarily bury in an urn. You would put their ashes in the ground?
No, you would put the ashes, and that's a good question. You would put the ashes in a specific type of urn,
like a biodegradable
urn, or like right, you can buy a paper urn or a sand urn or
something that'll decompose
exactly
in the earth. Okay. Yeah. And that's only offered in the Laurentians,
yeah, for what I know. Yeah.
Okay.
I think there's one that is going to open in Montreal, in a cemetery Montreal.
Okay.
I think Repos Saint-François d'Assise is opening something similar in the next year or even this summer.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you know if there's been a sort of pushback from funeral homes for opening businesses like that?
Not that I know of, because, well, I think it's a good thing for them to be diverse in their offers. So I have not seen that. Nope, not that I know of. And they are also very open with new practices, like for example hydrolyse alkaline.
Okay.
So have you heard of alkaline hydrolysis?
No, I haven't. Please enlighten me.
Okay, so it's also called aquamation in French. So it's a process of decomposition of the body with water. And like some alkaline solution that you just shoot in the water. So the body is decomposed within like I think 5 to 12 hours depending on the body and the machine, and then you get only the bones and you crush the bone and then you get the ashes, quote unquote. Like it's the same ending than cremation, but it's with water, and it's been offered here in Quebec since 2015, only in Granby, and since 2016 in Rouyn-Noranda, I think, so in Abitibi.
And why would someone choose, pourquoi quelqu'un choisirait ça? Est-ce que c'est éthiquement, moralement moins agressif? Ou...
This is how it's presented. There are some issues right now, like in other countries, where they are blocking some similar projects because they are concerned because the water is returning into the water sewage. So, they are concerned.
Like the Ganges.
So, yeah, it's not necessarily... c'est pas nécessairement vu positivement par tout le monde. Mais les personnes qui choisissent ça, mostly what they say is that it's less violent, because some people tend to see cremation as a violent process, but again, it depends on your belief. Mm-hmm. And it's seen as something more natural because it's how they advertise it anyway. So it's more natural. It's, but again, it's disputable.
Is there really a public, like, has there been sort of scientific studies or otherwise on like public health safeties? Because I guess the reason, one of the reasons why this law is so difficult to change is because of public health issues.
And this is, again, this is what interests, what is really interesting to me in my research is that in the law, what we see is how they say that the principle of the law is for public health safety. But again, it's never defined what you mean by public health safety. And it's hard to believe that there is really a danger in a body decomposing like for more than 24 hours where you just cross like the border to Ontario and then it's fine. So...
And haven't bodies been buried like that for like the beginning of time?
Of course, there are some diseases that are... more dangerous, like cholera, but I mean it's really rare.
Yeah.
So this is named in the law like cholera, but again, I mean anyway. So c'est là qu'on voit que, puis c'est ça mon hypothèse aussi. C'est pas juste mon hypothèse, mais c'est là qu'on voit que ce qu'on appelle santé publique, c'est défini culturellement, politiquement, puis ça a des assises historiques, politiques, culturelles, puis c'est que c'est mouvant aussi.
Mm-hmm.
Donc, c'est ça qui est intéressant présentement, parce que là, c'est là qu'on voit quelles sont les conséquences politiques de déterminer, ben ça, c'est de la santé publique et tout ça. Puis c'est, en fait, c'est la partie grise que j'aimerais plus creuser dans ma recherche. Mm-hmm.
Oui, c'est ça. C'est tout comme au Québec, notre histoire catholique puis notre histoire religieuse. Mm-hmm. Si, est-ce que tu penses que c'est un peu à cause de cette historique-là que la loi...
Mm-hmm.
Bouge difficilement.
Oui, il y a des sociologues qui pensent justement que c'est à cause du type de catholicisme qu'il y a eu au Québec versus plus du christianisme anglo-protestant ailleurs dans le Canada, où ici, il y a eu comme peut-être plus une espèce de... d'effet de... Parce qu'au départ, l'industrie funéraire, l'Église catholique au Québec sont main dans la main. Ils travaillent en parallèle. Mm-hmm. On va porter le corps à l'industrie funéraire. Puis là, quand ils ont fini leur travail d'embaumement, ben là, on le donne à l'Église. L'Église fait son travail. On enterre, ça finit là. Fait qu'ils ont vraiment fonctionné ensemble. Fait que peut-être que oui, effectivement, il y a eu peut-être comme juste un changement d'institution. C'est-à-dire que quand les gens voulaient plus faire affaire avec l'Église catholique, ben, again, it's a big generalization.
Mm-hmm.
They just turn to the funeral director instead. So
maybe
it's that, maybe not. And in the rest of Canada, it was always more liberal, more open, maybe. Mm-hmm. So people were just more able to choose what they wanted for themselves, I guess. That's one way to see it.
Mais il y a aussi des coûts reliés à ça. Oui. Il y a des coûts élevés.
Oui, oui, merci. Quelle bonne question. Mais oui, parce que you have to hire the services of a funeral director. That means that bottom line, like the cheapest way to go, it's $1,000 bare minimum. Oh. Because it's opening like your file and transportation of the body and then cremation. And then if you want nothing else, just like the ashes in a basic urn or box, then that's it. So it's $1,000. But Quebec has this program that like gives you, if you have like no un faible revenu, so you get, I think it's $2,500 to cover the basic costs of a basic funeral or okay. basic, but funeral, I say funeral, but it means arrangements. Like you don't necessarily have enough means to get like a ceremony or, you know, even like a notice in the journal, like in the newspaper.
An obituary.
Yeah. Obituary. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So, wow. So it's a, and the average cost in Canada of the funeral, like, for example, traditional funeral, so embalming, viewing, ceremony, burial, it's minimum $6,000 minimum.
Oh, so, my God. Yeah.
So that's why some people across Canada and in the States, they are advocating for what is called home funerals, where you bypass the funeral services in industry for making like a do-it-yourself funeral, where you save a lot of money. Because if you, for example, opt for a shroud, then you can use recycled fabric, so that costs almost nothing. And then the viewing at home, well it costs, you don't have to rent like the room mm-hmm. or stuff, so it's yeah.
And you can, I suppose, also just be more free in the rituals that you do to, you know, a lot, like, in whatever you believe in. Or,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure funeral directors are very accommodating yes. to more secular ideas, but
they really are accommodating. You can do almost whatever you want in a funeral home for the ceremony, but again, it costs something. So if you want to, I don't know, have a PowerPoint presentation with photos... It costs something just to rent
yeah,
the screen.
The projector, yeah.
So even if it's already there, you need to pay. So yes, if it's at home, then you can do whatever you want and money is not or almost not an issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's also, I guess, it's, I mean, easier if, for example, the person knows she or he or they are dying and then they can prepare, and it might be, I don't know, soothing to know that everything is going to be okay and
Ouais. Yeah. Ouais, ça c'est ma prochaine question. J'ai déjà rencontré des gens qui sont décédés qui ne voulaient absolument rien.
Mm-hmm.
Puis une des, ben, il y avait deux grosses raisons qu'on vient de parler. C'est une des raisons, c'était l'argent. Ils voulaient pas que la famille dépense cet argent-là pour faire des funérailles. Et c'était aussi l'agnotisme, tu sais, c'était, yeah. like, they didn't want anything that,
yeah.
in a way, was religious in any way. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if, like, some of the laws were loosened and more freer, then that would sort of open things up for people, at least to give the family an opportunity
yeah.
to say goodbye.
I think so. That's a great point, because I believe that, yeah, if you had more space to create your own ritual, maybe people would be more open to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, it's not disturbing for the person that decides to, I don't want anything, to do nothing, but it's disturbing for the people that are staying.
Mm-hmm.
Because they need something, they want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I understand the money is a big issue in that regard. Mais oui, c'est ça, c'est juste d'être plus ouvert pour permettre une plus grande diversité, puis que les gens se sentent à l'aise aussi de le faire. Mais c'est aussi, je pensais, dans in the paper that I wrote, I was thinking about all the families that are not Christians, mm-hmm. and that are not atheists, and that are used to care for the dead body and stuff like that, and they can't because of the law. and for sometimes weird reasons. So it's, I know that some communities, like for example, the Muslim community, they cannot bury their loved ones without a coffin, which is the, like the tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And the embalming is not an option. So they need to really do it quickly and in a coffin in that case. So they are obliged to, you know, they are forced to do some things that are against their beliefs. Again, for so-called safety, public safety reasons.
Which isn't defined. Health,
which is not defined. Which, if you live in Ontario, you don't have to. So
could I decide to be buried as a Quebec resident?
Mm-hmm.
Could I decide to be buried in Ontario, or you also mentioned Saskatchewan had the same practices, or BC?
You would need to be transferred from a province to another,
and that would require a funeral cert. That would, from
exactly, and that would most likely require an embalming process. Because if you fly or if you are transported from provinces to provinces, you need to be embalmed.
If you're starting from Quebec, right?
Yes.
Puis si un corps revient, mettons qu'il y a quelqu'un qui a habité en Colombie-Britannique, mais la famille, tout le monde habite au Québec,
mm-hmm.
c'est la même chose, j'imagine? C'est comme une rapatriation du corps?
Yes. I don't know the specifics, but most likely, like, it depends also on the company, the airplane company. If they probably they will ask for the body to be embalmed and in a special coffin to get shipped in Quebec. I don't know this. I mean, I might be mistaken, but yeah, it might be more complicated for you. You should just move in Ontario.
C'est où que tu as commencé à être intéressée par tout ça? Parce que quand on correspondait, tu disais, oh, I love meeting people who want to talk about death. Puis,
Oui. Quand j'ai su que je voulais faire une maîtrise qui allait parler de la mort, quand je faisais mon bac, j'ai fait mon bac en enseignement de l'éthique et de la culture religieuse. Rest in peace.
Ouais, c'est ça, rest in peace, CCR. Ouais.
Mais, puis j'avais un cours sur mort, culture et religion, so death, culture and religions, and I was really into it. And then when I started my master's, I realized that I was always really interested in death. Like when I was 12, I used to read the obituary section in the newspaper and just compare things for fun. And so the more I study it, the more I remember things that I used to do when I was a child that is related to death in some way. Mm-hmm. And I remember having a really early, I think Valerie mentioned it last week, an early conscience of my finitude. I knew that, like, from early on, what it meant to die. And I remember having long session of thinking about the composition of my great-grandfather that was dead. Like, it was, like, I think insomnia started back then when I was 5 because of that. But also because I think grown-ups wouldn't explain to me things. So I was just, I just wanted to know.
Mm-hmm.
And that
Puis c'était, think, est-ce que pour toi c'est une sorte de préparation à ta mort et à la mort des autres, ou c'était juste vraiment une fascination de ce qui se passe durant, après?
Je pense pas que c'est une préparation, parce que j'ai vraiment le sentiment que même si, even if I know like how death works, how I think you are never prepared. You are never prepared.
No.
You cannot be prepared. It's not possible. So you just have to...
Oui, c'est ça. C'est ça que tout le monde me dit au courant des entrevues que j'ai eues. C'est ma grande question, c'est quoi ta relation à la mort maintenant? Est-ce que tu as compris quelque chose? Est-ce que tu as moins peur? C'est sûr que je pense que peut-être qu'en étudiant la mort, on a plus une acceptation de ça, mais...
No.
Il n'y a pas de réponse.
Pas de réponse. Puis aussi, c'est... Puis c'est ça, c'est que de se rendre compte que c'est toujours quelque chose de difficile, que c'est toujours painful. Puis c'est un peu pour ça aussi que je pense qu'il faut permettre aux gens d'essayer de s'organiser comme ils le veulent, comme ils sont à l'aise. Ouais. Permettre ça aux personnes. Ouais. Parce que c'est la moindre des choses.
Ouais, tu as dit dans ton papier que j'ai trouvé vraiment intéressant, c'est que s'il y avait plus d'ouverture au niveau de la loi au Québec... ça l'aiderait tellement plus le processus de, like the grieving process, where families can maybe do the bathing of the body themselves and be around the body longer. And,
yeah, maybe not.
Depending, maybe, but yes, having the option.
Exactly. I think it's just having the option open. So it's a little bit out of the topic, but I remember seeing the documentary How to Die in Oregon. It's about...
is that on Netflix?
No, it's not.
Available? Can I watch it tonight?
No, it's available on... I don't remember the website, but you can get access with, like, university access and stuff. Anyway.
We'll take that out.
And
How to Die in Oregon.
Yeah, and it's about assisted dying.
Mm.
And so in Oregon, it's not like in Quebec. It's been a long time that they have this available. I think in the 90s. And you get the medication and you have it at home and you decide when you take it or if you take it at all. But for many people in the documentary, they say just having the medication at home, it was a huge relief. Really? Just knowing that they have this option open, even if they end up down to not like
taking it,
it's just a huge relief. So maybe just having the back to the law in Quebec, just having the option to be able to choose what you want for the funeral, regardless of your financial means, it might be a huge relief. And I think it's, I would argue that it's a basic human right. Right.
Yeah, I completely agree. And we get to choose everything else. On peut décider comment se marier, pour la plupart. Bon, ça n'a pas historiquement été toujours aussi inclusif. Mm-hmm. Mais on peut choisir notre naissance ou comment qu'on donne la naissance. Puis ça fait tellement partie du cycle de la vie. Alors pourquoi ça serait pas ça? Puis c'est tellement... C'est comme on a invité Amélie la semaine passée qui disait que c'est tellement le moment le plus intime de la vie, la mort. Pourquoi pas avoir quelque chose? Puis je pense que ça nous aiderait dans notre culture... De passer à travers puis de comme comprendre la mort, parce que je pense que c'est comme si on n'a pas donné d'option pour faire face à la mort,
mm-hmm.
dans notre culture, dans notre société. Maybe if we were able to face death more and
mm-hmm.
be able to choose and be around it and go through the process with the dying, and when they're dead, that there would be just a bigger understanding and acceptance, because we're all gonna go through it.
Exactly. I think you're absolutely right. And I think that it's, like, in a general way, tending towards that. Like, they,
I hope so.
Yeah. Because, like, again, just last week, José Masson from... she's a spokesperson for Corporation des Thanatologues du Québec. She was arguing for... Well, advocating for letting young children... be there, like, when, for example, if their mother is having assisted dying suicide, to let the children in the room, because some hospitals don't want to, if I understood correctly, like, they want to set like a 14-year-old minimum.
Interesting.
Yeah, so, but again, so yes, and arguing for, je sais qu'il y a des maisons funéraires qui s'ouvrent présentement, il y en a sur la Rive-Sud de Québec, entre autres, j'ai vu ça, où ils ont un espace enfant dans le salon funéraire, fait qu'avec des jeux, avec, tu sais, que les enfants sont les bienvenus aussi. Mm-hmm. Parce que je pense que c'est ça aussi, si on prive les enfants des réponses à leurs questions, ben en grandissant, ça fait des adultes qui n'ont pas plus les réponses à leurs questions.
Absolument, oui. Puis c'est vraiment à cet âge-là qui ont tellement des questions, puis la curiosité, puis pas nécessairement moins d'émotions face à ça, mais peut-être moins peur, parce que comme tout l'univers leur est ouvert, fait qu'ils ont des questions à tout.
Oui, c'est ça.
Puis ça pourrait être là qu'on, à ces jeunes âges-là, qu'on, qu'on pourrait ouvrir un peu plus notre like our acceptance and understanding mm-hmm, of it.
Exactly. And mais à, je pense que la recherche de plus en plus tend à dire justement aux enfants la vérité. T'sais, c'est ouais. ça, quand il y a un décès, ben on dit pas, genre c'est mieux, c'est suggéré de pas dire ben grand-papa est dans le ciel, parce que l'enfant va juste faire mais où ouais. ça dans le ciel, tu sais, ouais. juste dire les vraies choses dans des mots que les enfants peuvent comprendre parce qu'ils ouais. peuvent comprendre.
Ouais.
Mais bon, oui, donc une plus grande ouverture. Puis comme you mentioned birth, I think the way we tend to deal with birth and the way we deal with death are linked. Like when birth was starting to be medicalized in the hospital, then death was too.
Interesting.
At the same time, and wow. scholars are saying that also. It's not me, I'm not inventing it. And now there's like a comeback, like midwife comeback and death doula.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
I think there, yeah.
Wow, so that happened in parallel.
Yeah.
When
I think so. Wow. I think we can see that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, good. So you're saying that you're seeing things move in the right direction.
I don't know if there's a right. I don't want to.
Right, right.
Okay, I don't yeah. want to speak about a right or a wrong direction. I think just things are moving.
Things are moving and changing.
They were always moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I think questions are being raised and issues are addressed in some ways. So, for example, right now it's really the assisted dying thing that is really médiatisé, si mm-hmm. on veut. So we talk about it at least.
Right. And how can us living mortals be more informed on the legislation and what's going on? And if we wanted to advocate towards more loosening of the laws, mm-hmm. what can we do?
Well, that's a good question, because I'm asking myself the same question.
Well, you're doing your PhD yeah. on that, so yeah, you're pretty... Yeah,
but I think there are ways, like there are some Facebook groups, there are some community like that are working towards it. I know there are more organized groups in the rest of Canada and in the States. Right now in Quebec, I think that people are trying to communicate more with each other.
Okay.
But I think that it's something that needs to be done. Like, we need to do it. It's in the process. And I don't know how to do it. I think we just need to talk with people. And
I think people should just share this podcast. Yes,
maybe.
That's maybe. What I think.
But, yeah.
Qu'est-ce qui s'en vient pour toi? What's next for you? What are you up to?
Right now I'm in, I'm not doing my field work yet, because mm-hmm. I need to prepare for it. And so I will be in the shadows for the next year or so. And then afterwards I want to, je vais juste être sur le terrain.
Et puis c'est quoi être sur le terrain
pour moi présentement, ça va être aller hang out dans des funeral homes, aller parler, il y a des gens qui travaillent dans d'autres, comme community death care and death doulas, and maybe students from Rosemont, to see how it's like for them, because I'm also really interested in how, yes, the law and regulations, but also how it is to work in this environment, and what are the tensions, and what it is to be a death worker, what it means to be a death worker in Quebec right now. In this context, so and I really want to meet people and talk with them, and
do you find that studying this has given a sort of a richer sense of your life and a richer sense of meaning to your life?
Yes and no. I mean, if you ask me like point blank, what is the meaning of life? I don't have any answer for you, but...
Oh, shit. That was my next question.
Sorry. But I feel like ça m'a permis de voir que j'ai vraiment envie de, comme d'aider les gens. C'est puis de m'attaquer, pas de m'attaquer, mais de je pense qu'un des rôles de la recherche doit être de mettre en lumière les dynamiques politiques, sociale, culturelle, puis de faciliter la vie des gens. Mm-hmm. Si les gens veulent plus de diversité, je pense, dans leur choix de pratique funéraire, mais j'ai comme ce like a feeling of purpose que je dois faciliter ça.
Ouais, absolument.
But again, je sais pas qu'est-ce que je vais qui je vais rencontrer, quelles issues vont comme se pointer dans ma recherche. Fait que ça va surtout, c'est ça, je veux faire ça, tant qu'à faire quelque chose, je veux que ça serve. C'est un idéal de chercheur, j'imagine, de vouloir servir, mais c'est ça.
J'ai une dernière question. Last thing that I ask all of my guests, and I don't want you to think about it too much.
Okay.
So I want you to complete the next phrase with one word.
Okay.
Marie-Pierre is a vehicle for...
I just want to say messiness. Is that a good answer?
That's the best answer. I don't, like, no one has ever said that.
But I'm okay with it, you know? Okay. Life is messy. Death is messy.
Yeah.
Research is messy. Doing a PhD is messy. Yeah. Human relations are messy. So, yeah. I'm a mess and I'm proud.
That's so great.
That's who I am.
I'm so glad that I met you.
Thank you.
Big mess, but...
thank you for having me.
But it was so enlightening. And I really wish you luck. And I think, as you said, that you want to serve. And I think that this is, it's such a rare avenue for people to serve. And I think it's exactly what is needed. So I think you're doing good.
Thank you so much.
Merci.
Thank you for having me.